originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at www.horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, he's currently third in the standings by number of wins at Arlington. Prior to the move to Chicago, he was leading rider in Ohio 6 times. He's won over 91 stakes races, 4 of those graded stakes victories. With 3,014 wins and over $37 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey Julio Felix. Julio, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Christina. Pleasure being here.
It's great to have you here, Julio. You have had quite the successful year, quite the successful career, and the year as well. You're doing so well at Arlington right now. Tell us how you like Chicago.
Yeah, it's we got hot summers and cold winters. What can I say? I love it. I'm from the island, so really it doesn't bother me. Well, but Chicago has been very good to me. Beautiful place. You know, all year racing. We have all year racing, so I really don't have to get up and leave and go somewhere else. So this is very convenient for me.
Yeah, so many jockeys have to be gypsies somewhat. They move around so much. So you like staying in one place then?
Oh, yeah. We have 10 and a half months of racing, so it's perfect. That's why I stayed in Ohio all those years, because they ran just about 9 months out of the year. Plus, I was, you know, the big fish in the little pond, like they say, right?
Well, Julio, obviously in Ohio too, but especially in Chicago, obviously you have really cold winters up there. How do you deal with that?
I don't know. I guess adrenaline and the will to win. I think, you know, when you're winning races, it doesn't matter how cold it is, it warms you up.
That's a great answer. I love it, Julio. And I guess where you're from, you're from the islands, the Virgin Islands. I guess it doesn't get too cold over there, right?
No, not really. If it gets to like 70, that's kind of cool. But we're surrounded by the ocean over there, so it's not as hot as people think it is, you know?
Sounds like a nice place, Julio. So tell us, where you were born in the States, though, but you grew up in the island.
Yeah, I was born in New York. I don't know how that happened. All my brothers and sisters and everyone else was born in St. Croix and in Puerto Rico. So that's a good question. I don't know how I ended up in New York, but I was raised up in the Virgin Islands from a little baby. That's all I knew. I never got to see New York, so I can't tell you how how it looks over there.
Well, tell us, what was your family doing in New York?
I don't know. My dad, he was in Vietnam. And I don't know. He was stationed over there somehow. He had a house over there or something. I don't know how I ended up in New York, but I think my dad was, you know, he was moving from place to place because he was in the Army, and that's where he was, in New York.
Wow, well, it's wonderful for his service. But tell us then, so you actually grew up, though, in St. Croix, and tell us what it was like growing up there.
Oh, it was a little tough because I kind of grew up in the projects, but we were like family everywhere. My grandma, she was like big mama of the projects, you know. Anyone that needed food to eat, they all came by the house, and she always offered everyone food and everything. So I grew up, you know, around friends and family, and I started off playing basketball. I was pretty good at it, playing basketball, but I never grew. Then I started playing baseball, and I was really good at that too. I was an excellent pitcher. I ended up taking my little league team to the All-Star, and we went to Puerto Rico. But we won 2 games out of 5, and I won both of them. So I had a pretty interesting life.
So you were quite the athlete from an early age. I don't hear too many jockeys tell me they were a basketball player before, but like you said, you didn't grow into that, but you succeeded at baseball. And
yes.
Did you ever think as a kid you would pursue baseball as a career?
Yeah, I thought, because I was so good, no one could hit my ball when I pitched. But then when we moved from that 16 to 18 league, those guys were giants, and I was a little shrimp. And I was like, what? I got to find me something else I could do.
So how did you find the racetrack?
That's a good question. My best friend, he was always like a few years older than me, but I always hang around the big crowds. He was a jockey, and I used to follow him all the time. And there was this one day, he fell and broke his leg. And when he came back, he sat up like a tree. He got so heavy and so tall that he couldn't do it anymore. And he said, well, you could be a jockey. You're short and small. I only weighed like 90 pounds back then. And that's how I started riding. I remember the first horse I got on, he started jogging and I fell off. That was funny. I got right back on, though.
That's the way to do it, right? And so I don't know anything about racing in St. Croix, so I guess there's a racetrack and you were able to gallop horses and eventually, you know, work your way up there?
Yeah, well... You know, a lot of people told me I would never make it because they expect me to be good, like from the start. But I never been on a horse, and when I got to the racetrack, I tried to be a jockey right away, and I really wasn't ready for it. So people would say, "Oh, you should quit. You'll never be a jockey." And you know, I'm the kind of person, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to prove you wrong. So I got serious about it, and I went 120% in it. My friend was teaching me how to ride, and everything he taught me, I just started to put it to practice. And I mean, I fell on my head 100 times. I don't know how I never got hurt. I must have had an angel looking up for me. And but I would fall off, and I would get right back on, and I would do it again. I was on the track at 4 o'clock every morning. And then I would work horses, and then I would go to school and come back to the track. So I was on the track 24/7. I mean, whenever I had a chance, I was on the track.
So what was it, even when you're falling off horses and you're struggling a little bit in the beginning, what was it that kept you coming back and working so hard?
It was those people that told me I would never make it. I had to prove them wrong. I had to prove them wrong, and I loved it. I loved it from the beginning. I love how it felt, the adrenaline, the feeling. I just felt how, you know, the connection with the horses, and I knew I could do it, you know. And when I got that first win back home, it's amazing how it started, because the Virgin Islands are three islands. It's St. Croix, St. Thomas, and St. John. And we always have a competition going, St. Croix against St. Thomas and against Tortola. And we always think we're better than one another, you know? You know how that is.
Oh, yeah.
And it just so happened that my people in St. Croix, the same guys that said I would never make it, they didn't want to we went to St. Thomas to race. It was like a big stake race. They call it the Governor's Cup. It's the biggest race in the Virgin Islands. And one of the guys from St. Thomas put me on their horse, and I won the race. So the first race I ever won was a stake race.
That's amazing. And the biggest race, you said, around. That's incredible.
I know. Yeah. That's crazy, because that was a big deal. I was riding against my own people from St. Croix. Well, we all won people, but we had something. You know, we thought we were better than them, and I rode their horse, and I won the race. And when I came back to St. Croix, that's when my career really started. Then everyone wanted to ride me then.
Were they upset that you rode for someone from St. Thomas?
not really. Well, they were a little bit, but I didn't care. I wanted to win.
And what's it like? What's it like? What's racing like there in the Virgin Islands? I mean, do they initiate you like they do here after the race? What was that like?
Oh, it's not really professional like it is here now. It is right now. They're the casino bought the place, and it's a lot better than it used to be back then. But we had stewards, but they were not strict like here. It was like you do what you want. You could foul anybody, and we used to fight all the way down the lane on the horse's back. I mean, we'll be whipping one another and
wow,
stuff like that. So I really learned how to ride the rough way. And but that day they couldn't stop me. You know, you rode before, so you know when you have a lot of horse, you know, you could do whatever you want.
So are they hitting you?
Yeah.
Were they hitting you down the lane?
Well, they tried to shut me off, but I had so much horse, I went right through and won the race. It was a lot of fun. It was like a dream, and I feel that way up to this day. Every time I win a race, I get that feeling. It doesn't matter if it's a $5,000 horse or a $100,000 race. You know, just that feeling of winning is just such a, you know, sense of accomplishment. You know, it's a feeling you can't explain.
Jockey Julio Felix joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Julio, as you mentioned, obviously you really took off after winning the Governor's Cup, your very first race. So tell us, you know, the success you found there in the islands, and how long did you stay there?
Yeah, well, that one year after I won the Governor's Cup, I came back to St. Croix, and I became leading rider after that. I started winning everything, and unfortunately, all those wins down there don't count. you know, because it's not a recognized track. Else I would have reached 3,000 wins a long time ago. But, yeah, you know, I remember I was 16 years old, and I, you know, I had a few girlfriends, and I had this one little girl got pregnant for me, so I kind of quit school, and, you know, and I started being a jockey more. I started riding more, but back home, we only race once every 3 weeks. So it wasn't enough for me to take care of my son. So I had to find a job. I was a mechanic. I did landscaping just to take care of my son. And I remember my best friend, he was my other best friend, he was in Miami. He was grooming for John Tomorrow. He was leading trainer in Miami. And he called me and he said, "Hey Julio, why don't you come up here? You make it big over here. You'll be leading jockey over here." And I'm like, I was thinking about it. And I'm like, but the whole, you know how it is. You rode before, Christina, and when you start riding it, that it just gets in your blood. That horse racing is like, it's in your blood. I couldn't stop thinking about riding, and so when he called me, I didn't even think twice about it. I left and I went to Miami, and I got the same treatment when I got there, because in the Virgin Islands, we have no jockey school. It's not recognized. It's not like Puerto Rico or Panama or Venezuela. They have jockey schools, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to get my start, it was tough for me. I was the first one to really pave the road for my people from the Virgin Islands. And so for the first 6 months of my bug, no one wanted to really give me a shot. And same trainers, I mean, not the same trainers, but people would say, "Oh, why don't you quit? You never make it." When they did that, that's the worst thing you could ever tell me. Don't ever tell me to quit. Don't ever tell me you can't do it. And don't ever tell me I can't make it. Because I started winning races left and right over there with the bug. And then I was going to be, well, I've won stake races and everything in Miami. I've won a lot of races. But I was going to be one of the top guys down there, and I fell and broke my leg. Mm. And when I came back, it was like I had to start all over again. And that's when I moved to Cleveland, to Ohio. And my career took off even better then.
Well, Julio, let's talk about, as we know, injuries are obviously common in our sport. But prior to that, when you first moved to Miami, what was that like leaving your family? And obviously you were so excited to ride in the States, but to leave your family had to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was tough. But you see, my son's mom and me, I took care of my son, but we was never really together. I was just a kid. I was 16 and she was 16. And we was never really in love, but I was there for my son. But she moved away to Orlando for school and stuff. So it was kind of easier for me to leave because I was closer to Orlando. I was only an hour away from Miami to Orlando. It's like an hour. So I got close. It was kind of God leading me, you know, writing on the wall. And so he was actually my main my main reason. He made it easier for me, my son. I just wanted to be closer to him, so it wasn't that hard for me to leave. I got a little homesick because, you know, your friends and everything, but, you know, just I was doing what I love. So when you're doing what you love, it's a lot easier. You know what I mean?
I do indeed, Julio. And you mentioned when you first arrived, it was almost like starting over, and you had to prove yourself, and you had a lot of, you know, naysayers and people who doubted you. But besides that, besides the hardships of dealing with that, what was it like riding in the States versus riding in the Virgin Islands, you had to get used to that, to stewards and, you know, to following the rules. What was, how hard was that for you?
Oh, it was hard because I actually thought I could ride, and until I got to Miami and I found out I really couldn't ride. So, a lot of guys, they were right to tell me, oh, you look terrible. But, you know, whenever you tell me that, I'm going to try to get better. And there was this one guy from Panama that he went to the jockey school in Panama, and he just got too big and heavy. And he was the one that he put me on a little barrel with two irons, and we hooked up some reins on a tree. And he took me to school, and he taught me how to ride on that thing. And it was like I transformed from night to day. And I started to look like the guys. I even started to look stronger than them because I worked harder. You know, when I do something, I go all in. And so, but riding over there, I mean, they were like, that was the best colony in the world. Jerry Bailey was riding. You had even Cordero. I just had the bug, but Angel Cordero last year, he rode over there. You had Chris Antley. You have Dave Penna. You had the best of the best. Douglas Valiente. You had Rene Douglas. Jose Santos. I mean, you had Hall of Fame riders was riding there. Even early fires from right here, from the great, you know, city of Chicago, he was riding down there. And those are the kind of riders I learned to ride with. So Miami was like, it was the breeding ground for jockeys, I think. You know, every rider that left Miami went on to be leading rider anywhere else in the country. Could be leading rider in anywhere else in the country. And that's what happened to me. When I left Miami, I went to Cleveland, Ohio, and right away it proved it. I was leading rider. Now I'm 3,000 wins. I passed my 3,000 wins. So it was a very good experience going through Miami.
Yeah, what a tough colony. My gosh. And who was your agent down there?
There was a guy named Roberto Lopez. He had a jockey by the name of Odin Londono. He was a monster on a horse. He was one that he was heavy, but he reduced all day. And that was another. I had some issues with my weight, and I learned how to reduce with those guys, like Cornelio Velasquez. But yeah, my agent name was Roberto Lopez, and he kind of got sick and he passed away. May he rest in peace.
Mm.
But he saw the ability in me also, and we did good at the end of my bug over there, and then he got sick.
So you mentioned the weight. You mentioned how you learned to reduce, and what, obviously you've been riding for a number of years, Julio. What do you do to maintain that weight now?
I eat healthy. I make sure I have a breakfast, and that takes me through the day. That helps me in case I have to reduce. I could pull a pound or two or three if I have something in my stomach. But I used to try to reduce with nothing in my stomach, and then it made me a little sick, a little weak. But now by eating breakfast, it takes me through the whole day. I drink a lot of water. And now I eat a lot of grilled food. I love grilling. I love being on the grill. And that's how I keep my weight down. Eating grilled food, fish, chicken.
So you'll just eat breakfast and that'll last you the entire day, and then you'll eat after you ride.
Yeah. I eat after I ride, and I come, it's surprising, and drink a lot of water. A lot of water. That's a miracle worker there. You think you'll get heavy because you're drinking a lot of water, but is the opposite. It cleans you out, you know. It helps your digestive system and helps your body work right.
How about your fitness? Obviously, you know, when you have to watch your weight, you don't want to put on too much muscle, and it sounds like you've always worked so hard in the mornings, but do you have to do anything in addition to riding to maintain your weight and to keep your fitness level?
Yeah, I jog a lot. I jog like 3 times a week. Play a lot of golf. I love golfing, so that kind of helps me burn some calories on my day off. But usually I stay busy.
Yeah.
That's how I keep it off. Just staying busy, keep walking and burn some calories and drink water.
Yeah, Julio, I think every time I've called you, you've been out on the golf course. So you must enjoy it quite a bit. You must be pretty good.
I finally got it. Someone told me, why don't you get a golf lesson? I learned on my own, and I finally took a couple golf lessons, and my game is pretty good right now. It's in a good place right now.
I don't know, Julio. I don't have the patience for it. And drove me crazy, so I gave up. Oh, my gosh. But keeping busy, keeping just not, you know, laying around and being lazy on your days off, that's what helps you with your weight, too.
Oh, for sure. You got to stay busy. You know, our job, you know, it's so easy to get out of shape. You know, riding horses is not easy. And, you know, especially if you're a person that have to reduce, and most riders now, just about 80% of riders have to reduce. We're not midgets like they used to be way back in the days, you know. And the weight level is still the same. I don't know why horses get in with 114 or 115 pounds when the exercise right away 130 to 150 pounds, and the horses breathe, they work just as fast as they run in the morning. You know, if that was the case, they should not let exercise riders work horses or get on horses, you know. But it's still got to maintain. I'm lighter now than I was when I had the bug. Can you imagine that?
Wow. That's impressive.
Well, not really, but it's close.
Well, Julio, let's take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
With under a quarter to go, far outside Mr. Mardi Gras into the stretch. Three quarters, 1:10, and 4/5 seconds. It's recount. Here comes Valiant City. Trace Creek staying on toward the rail. Francois joins. Dropping back was Crewman. Mr. Mardi Gras on the far outside. Midnight Cello. Well back past the 16th. It's Trace Creek. 44-1 for Julio Felix. Charging home against the Hanshin Cup odds. Trace Creek scores. Francois gains second. Valiant City third. Recount fourth, Mr. Mardi Gras fifth in this 2016th renewal. Then Midnight Cello. Farther back was Crewman from One Go, All Go, and Blarp was last to pull up.
44-1 for Julio Felix. Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by Juggy Julio Felix. Julio, what do you think when you hear that replay?
It gives me the chills. Yeah, those long shots, they used to call me the long shot kid from way back, because that's how I made my name, riding the longest shots on the boat and winning, because nobody wanted to give me a shot. And I love it. That was the stake race, and oh, they always call me the money rider, too. Whenever the big races come around, they always call on me for that. And, you know, that was one of my sweetest victories right there. He came from dead last and 44-1. You never know unless you have to give your horse a shot to win. And around the turn, around the 3/8, I felt like I could win it. And man, he ran a beautiful race that day, Trace Creek, and he was an Arkansas bred.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. That was a great, great victory there. One of my favorite moments at Arlington.
Yeah, that was the Grade 3 Hanshin Cup Stakes at Arlington Park, as you mentioned. And, lit up the tote board. I wish I had my money on him that day. Very impressive, Julio. But let's go back now. And prior to the break, we were talking about your career in Miami and then how that was cut short by you fractured your leg. And then you made the move to Ohio. And obviously injuries are common in this sport. So did you ever have any doubts of coming back, or you just couldn't wait to get back in the saddle?
I couldn't wait to get back in the saddle. I did come back. I did win me some races in Miami before I left for Ohio, but I wanted to do more. I wanted to be leading rider somewhere, and this one trainer, he was like a dad to me, you know, and he told me to come to Ohio. He met me at Gulfstream 1 year, and he said, "You're going to be leading rider one of these days." And it just so happened that he lived in Cleveland, and he had a string of horses, and he told me to come. And I didn't think twice about it. I had that feeling, so I moved over there. And the only thing is, I had no agent, and no one wanted to take my book. And I told this, the leading agent over there, Mike Greenfield, I said, "If you take my book, I'll be leading rider." And he's like, "Well, I got to see you ride first." And it's so funny. He put me on the first horse he put me on, he was like 25-1 or something like that. Royalty Hill was his name, and he won. And I said, "Well, you're going to take my book now?" He said, "No, that was too easy." So he put me on another one, and he was like 40-1, and he also won. And then he said, "Okay, I'll take your book." And this was halfway through the meet, and I was leading rider before the meet was over. I was already in front.
Wow. You just took over.
Yeah, I was winning 5-6 a day. It was crazy. It was I was in a zone. It was awesome.
So you came to Ohio with you knew you wanted to be leading rider. There was nothing else on your mind, and you made it happen.
Nothing else on my mind. I made it happen. And you know, I believe in God too. God has brought me a long way, and he's protected me many times, and yeah, I pray a lot, and that's he's the reason for my success, you know, my faith also, you know, faith in God. But we have to do the work, you know, faith without work is dead. So, you know, you got to work hard, and you just can't sit on your butt and expect things to happen. You have to go make it happen.
So talking about working hard, Julio, I'm guessing you work pretty hard in the mornings then. I know some, you know, some riders don't work as hard as others, but I'm assuming you do.
Oh, yeah. You know, right now it's slowed down a lot. My agent, I got a good agent. And but whenever I'm needed, I'm there at 5 o'clock, 4:30. If I have to be there at 4:30, I mean, I paid my dues. And I still do. Anytime any trainer needs me to work a horse, I'm there. So we have to work hard in the morning. No doubt.
Jockey Julio Felix joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Julio, you stayed in Ohio for quite a while, and what was the reasoning behind that? You just dominated that place, or and then why did you decide to eventually move to Chicago?
Yeah, I stayed in Ohio because I was winning every stake race you could think about. I was winning, I mean, no joke, I was winning between 11 and 15 stake races a year. Wow. I was winning them everywhere. I won just about every stake race you could think about except the Ohio Derby. But, they're not counted as graded stakes, but it's a stake race regardless. And to win one of those races is not easy because you're riding against or running against the best horses in the area. And Ohio, they got some good horses over there too. It's not as easy as people think it is. So that's what kept me there, being leading jockey. And I could have been leading jockey many more times, but I shipped out of town half the time. But I was also rewarded by winning the stake races, so it didn't bother me. I could have been leading jockey about 5 or 6 more times. I've missed by 1 or 2 wins. You know, but I wouldn't trade anything for the world. It's, you know, I've had a good career.
So you chip around, you mentioned, and is that just you chip with the good horses for the good trainers you rode for all over?
Yeah. Ohio was 3 racetracks. It was Cleveland, it was Thistledown, Beulah, Riverdown. And they always had, like, stake races at the 3 tracks. And I followed the horses. I followed the good horses. I've ridden many champions. I mean, I've been in many magazines, and I got a lot of trophies. I give half of them away. That's the kind of guy I am. You know, if I have a good fan comes to see me all the time, I just give them a trophy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I am. I believe in giving back to the fans and the people, you know?
Well, and Julio, we were talking during the break. You received a wonderful award from your native land, the Virgin Islands, for your success here in the States. You know, they quote, legendary jockey Julio Felix. That they felt you should be awarded and honored for your exceptional performances. And how did that feel when you received that award?
Oh, that was awesome. I was like, this is for all the haters and all the people that didn't think I would never make it. But also it was, you know, for the people that told me I would make it too, you know. It was just such a good. I mean, I felt like now I have a legacy, you know. I've created a legacy, and I could, you know, I want to be a good example for the people back home, if that make any sense. I want to, because I'm the first one actually from the Virgin Islands to have won this amount of races, to won 3,000 races. And, you know, I've had some good students come from down there, too, that I've taught how to ride. You know, I could tell you about that later if you want.
Well, go ahead, Julio. Tell us.
I feel like I've done something now, and I've paved a path for the young riders or anyone that wants to come from our island to be a jockey. Yeah, and I've over the years I've taught some riders how to ride, you know, like Kevin Krieger, Victor Lebrun, you know, those guys have made it. Kerwin John, those guys have made it big in America. My youngest brother, he unfortunately didn't get to make it because he had an accident back home and he lost his life riding horses, and that kind of tore me apart for a while. For a year or two, I really didn't care to ride anymore. But he's another reason why I kept riding, because I said I gotta keep the memory going, and I'm doing it for him. For him and me, you know, for both of us. But yeah, I've taught some good riders from back home, so I've paved the way for the young riders from the Virgin Islands.
I'm so sorry about your loss, Julio, but yeah, you're riding in his honor, of course. And so since you started finding such great success here in the States, did it become more popular in the Virgin Islands for young boys or kids or girls? Did they want to become jockeys like you?
Oh yeah, definitely. We have a young little rider right now named P.D. Prentice. He's doing pretty good at Altaria, and he's the last one that came up from the Virgin Islands, and he's doing really good. I'm very proud of him. And Victor Lebrun, he's still riding. Krieger got hurt, and so he's taking a little break. Kerwin Jan, I heard he's just coming back, but yeah, a lot of riders, they're starting to get focused, and they want to come out and try to make it in America.
Julio, let's talk about your decision to move to Chicago. And how long had you been riding in Ohio when you decided to make that move, and what happened that prompted you to do so?
Yeah, okay. Well, it was the purses, they started cutting back on the purses. It got smaller, the cutback in the stake races. So I wasn't allowed. We was limited with the stake races, so I wasn't winning 10 to 15 stake races anymore because they only had like five, maybe. And then we went from 9 months to 7 months. Then we went to 5 months. And they were talking about 4 months of racing for the year. So whenever the season was over, where would I go? You know, it was, you know, you got mortgage to pay and cars to pay, rent, everything. And the money was just not big enough. And so I first moved to Kentucky, to Turfway and Cincinnati right there. I would ride there, Turfway, Keeneland a little bit, and Churchill. But I finished second leading rider there at River Downs against the great Perry Utes. Mm. He's my hero, Perry Utes. He should be in the Hall of Fame. But I wasn't too happy over there. I rode with a friend of mine that Liz Morris was, she was riding at the time. I met her at Indiana Downs. And I told her, because she knew how to handicap races, and she was very smart, you know. And I had the feeling she wanted to quit being a jack, because she was fighting a weight and stuff like that. And I said, if you ever become an agent, you could have my book any day. I'll never forget that. It didn't take her long to quit. She quit. And I was riding a Turfway at that time, and she said, Julio, you told me if I ever become an agent, I could have your book. So I'm a man of my word. And she was in Chicago. She said, well, come over here. I'm like, oh, here we go again. But I love new beginnings. I love a challenge. So when I moved, I came to Chicago with her. Man, we were just tearing them up. We was winning left and right. You know, we had to work hard at it. But she was one of the best agents I ever had, Liz Morris.
Julio.
She was the reason I came to Chicago.
It's funny, Julio. I got your number from Liz Morris. I've had her on the show here. She's fantastic. She's one of the best agents around. She's here in Kentucky now. So it's very cool to hear the story that she got her start as an agent working for you. And what did you guys find when you arrived in Chicago? Did you immediately find success? Was it a challenge? What was it like?
We immediately found a lot of snow. It was that was the worst, coldest year ever in my life. And I lived in Cleveland for many years. And, beside the snow, we was riding for Jimmy DeVito and, you know, riding for trainers like him. You know, everyone else sees you riding for them. It makes it easier for them to give you a shot. Because they say if DeVito is riding Felix and Liz Morris, he got to be a good rider. So, he gave us a shot, and right away we got our feet in the door. Then everyone started riding us. So we found success, but it wasn't easy. We had to work hard at it because Chicago got some good riders too.
Well, you definitely worked hard, and as I mentioned, you're currently third in the standings by number of wins. And Julio, you actually just about a month ago, you won your 3,000th race. What was that like? That had to be an incredible feeling.
Yeah, that was like, remember that race I told you about at the beginning of the interview, the Governor's Cup in St. Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
That was my first win ever. That's what it felt like. When I won my 3,000, I was like, mission accomplished. It was like, felt like my first win ever. I felt like a virgin. it was just a wow feeling, a wow moment, unbelievable. I can't explain it. It just, you know, I saw all the champagne flying in the air, something you see on TV. It was happening to me. So it was a you know, to be honored by all your peers and the riders and the owners and management, everyone was just there to congratulate me. That was an awesome moment.
So what's next for you, Julio? You seem like a very goal-oriented person. You've won your 3,000th race. You've won more stakes races than we can even count. You've been leading rider so many times, 6 times in Ohio. What goals do you have you still want to reach?
I feel good. I feel like I'm 21 again. I'm not hurting. There was a time in my career where I got injuries after injuries, and it kind of slowed me down a little bit. But right now, I'm pain-free, and I feel as strong as I ever was, you know. And I feel like I, you know, as long as I still have this feeling, I love it. I want to do it. I'm still going to ride. I don't know if I could make it as long as Perry Utes. I mean, Perry Utes, he's still going. I mean, he's He's a bionic man. But I love riding still. I still want to do it, and I would love to train one day. That's one of my goals, to be a trainer. Because I love the horses. I know how to get one ready. There's a lot of horses I developed along the years and turned them into champions by working them my way and teaching them how to run, like Cyrus Sis and horses like that.
So you mentioned Sarah Sis, and she was a very, very talented filly. She actually, you know, was on the Kentucky Oaks Trail. She did run in the Kentucky Oaks. What was she? You've had two graded stakes victories aboard her, several others. You won the 2015 Grade 3 Honeybee Stakes aboard Sarah Sis and the Grade 3 2015 Iowa Oaks aboard Sarah Sis.
Yes.
Tell us what she was like and how did you get the mount?
Yeah, well, me and Liz Morris, again, she introduced me to Ingrid Mason. And that's all she had to do. After that, I took over. I kept telling her I want to ride for her. And I love the babies, because the babies, you know, the two-year-olds, they're the future. And that's how I always got my champions. I've ridden so many champions, I can't even remember all the names. But I always tell Ingrid, man, find me a good baby. And she was one of the quiet ones, and she was one of the least expensive ones of the whole group. She was only like probably 20,000, I think. They paid 20,000 for her. And she was just so quiet and cool, and she was fast. She did things effortless, and she was really fast, so I never asked her to run in the morning. I always let her gallop out strong, and I developed her. I mean, I taught her how to go longer, because she was already fast. And the first race she ever ran, she won by about 13 lengths, and I never even let her run. And then she turned out to be one of the best fillies I ever rode. Sarah Sis.
So you knew, you knew from the beginning, yeah, she was special.
Yeah, I knew she was special. They ran her right back in 2 weeks, and it's kind of hard to run a horse back that soon. When you run them back, they need at least 3 weeks to run to the best of their ability, at least 3 to 4 weeks, so that they can regroup. And so she ran back in 2 weeks, and she ran second to a nice filly. But then we came back again, and she was almost unbeatable. And I remember going to Oakland. That was when I first started to go to Oakland. It was with Sarah Sis. And that's the same year we won the Honeybee with her. And she has run against the best of the best. And Oakland Park is another stepping stone of champions. It's one of the toughest racetrack I've ever been to in my life. And it's a lot of fun, and it's always fun beating those guys over there too. You know, I've won races everywhere I went, and Oakland is one of the toughest places to win a race. And I can probably say I hold my own over there, but thanks to horses like Sarah Sis. You know, I ended up winning stake races over there with her. So she was a real blessing in my career, and she was fun. A lot of fun.
Would you say she was your favorite horse to ride?
One of my favorite. I rode another filly, a Gulfstream, that I think she was could have been probably the fastest thing I ever rode. Hunzinga was the name. I won the Sabin Stake race over there at Gulfstream. I think she broke the track record that day when I won with her, and she was another champion. And there's a lot more. There's a lot more. Believe me, I can't name all of them.
What about Lady Sherry?
Oh, yeah, she was sweet. She was a come from behind her, though. And the longer she went, the stronger she got. And I developed her also how to run. There was one named Don the Pike Mike. He was just a sprinter, and I won like 18 races with him, and 15 of them was probably stake races. There was Bucky's Brat. I won like the first 9 races of a career. There was a lot of champions. Wow.
So many. A long list, Julio. And you talk about developing a horse. And that has to be a great feeling when you work with a horse, you teach a horse, you're on this journey together, and then you find success. And do you enjoy riding the babies particularly of that?
Yeah, because the babies, that, you know, like I said, you have all the stake races, all the, you know, they have a future, you know, and you have a shot to go to the Kentucky Derby or Breeders' Cup. And, I mean, I never rode in the Derby. I could have ridden in it, but the horse I was going to ride wasn't, you know, he was going to run dead last, and I didn't want to run dead last. He did run dead last. But riding those kind of horses, it gives you an opportunity for big races like that, you know?
Well, Julio.
Yeah.
You know, maybe future Kentucky Derbies are out there for you. Unfortunately, we are all out of time, and wishing you all the best. This has been such a pleasure having you here on the show, Julio. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show, and you know, you and the and your crew. Just want to thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to tell my life story. Appreciate it.
Wishing all the best to Julio Felix. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website, horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and Express Bet Radio. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I am Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.